and support from the SciNipid Fund. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.
This is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Janine Jablonski. She's the director of the new gallery, I Love You Too, and the curator of a new show, Bonnie Lucas, 1978 to 2023, which is showing now through May 29th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Janine.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I actually was on the show. I was thinking back, I think it was about 15 years ago. It's
was,
lovely.
Was that with Ava?
It was. It was myself and Patrick Rock and another colleague. But to bring it back to here, again, I am Janine Jablonski. I'm the director of I Love You Too and the curator of this of our inaugural exhibition, which is Bonnie Lucas, 1978 through 2023. I Love You Too is a gallery here on at 925 Northwest Flanders, right here in the Pearl District. Most of you know this space historically as the seminal PDX Contemporary Gallery run by Jane Beebe. It was designed, I think, a dozen or so years ago by architect Brad Cloakville, and we really changed the space over, but we kept the central focus of it as a gallery, which is that it has these rotating moving walls. So we changed the floor, we changed the ceiling, we changed the lighting, we changed the office, but we kept this central piece, which is these moving walls designed by Beebe and Cloakville. So I can tell you a little bit about I Love You Too. Founded in 2020, I Love You Too takes an experimental approach to working with emerging and mid-career artists to produce exhibitions, editions, projects, and fair presentations. The team grounds the program in its focused support of artists and decades of gallery advisory collections and curatorial experience. The gallery was founded in 2020 by artist Ali Ferlati. Ferlati really developed the original space on Southwest Oak in response and during the pandemic. She was looking for an immediate way to give artists access to space, to resource. So during that time, there was a series of artists in residence where they would come into a retail space and be given the keys for a month, and they might have a shop or a exhibition. And there was kind of fishbowl performances because during that time it felt really necessary. So
was this on Oak by Sizzle Pie?
Exactly, in that little triangle right there. This level of generosity, of experimentation really came from this post-COVID desire for to be relational with community, with artists, with each other, and that is really central to the mission here at I Love You Too.
So the Lucas work goes back to the 70s. As you come in, if you turn left and on the wall that's your is then on your left, there are two smaller pieces. So these are framed in white. The first one is about 2 foot by 1.5 feet, and it's a series of white yarn laid down, stuck down in concentric circles. Each circle is around a tiny object like a bead or a tag or a clothing tag There's a kind of mother of pearl button. There's a pink shell. The palette is sort of white with silver and then little highlights of pink. And tell us, what was Bonnie doing at that time?
So this work was created during, this series was started while Bonnie was receiving her education at Rutgers. To me, these really are the beginning of really looking at Bonnie as working with abstraction in this assemblage way. But I really, when I look at this work, I think about labor, I think about craft in connection to these ideas of femininity. And this was really the beginning of that for her and that those ideas within her practice. The craft is very apparent in this work. It is, you see the physicality of the artist's hand in each of these pieces really clearly. And I knew that people would respond to these in person, and they really have. They require you to get very close to them. You wanna, you know, you wanna be what we're like maybe 2 feet from the work. I just want to give a shout out to Ray Davis, who is just like a seminal, she's just an integral part of our community here in Portland. Ray did all the framing for the exhibition, and I think the community, she's kind of one of those people who's hidden labor in the art world here. But when you see a really good show that's presented in a way that's so tight and makes so much sense that it almost recedes, that is because Ray, as an artist and a framer, really is able to work with all of us galleries and like make the work presented in the best light. So
the piece just to the right of that, also untitled, is it's a white zipper that's mostly open, revealing beads, shells, buttons, sequins in a, on a string. And then around all that is this yarn that, again, has been placed in concentric forms. And it kind of looks like a plowed field, you know, where the farmer's gone around a fence or mm-hmm. something.
Right, and made those perfect striations with their plow. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I mean, I really, in this work, see the beginnings of her really beginning to explore sexuality and orifice within the work. This work is, again, really soft, really delicate, lovely, but I think she's beginning to really open up, like both literally and conceptually, these sort of like bigger ideas within sexuality and femininity.
When you talk about the labor inherent in this, putting yarn down for hours and hours mm-hmm. to get it perfectly lined up, what kind of labor does that kind of mirror? You know, what other types of labor do you associate with making fabric?
I think, to me personally, I think that that's like a pretty broad question. I mean, what does it, I can ping it back to you. Where do you go? I think it's also like, I could tell you that the answer to that from a feminine perspective, but from the masculine, you might have a different answer.
I'm assuming in the 70s, a feminist artist was saying, look at the sort of hidden labor that goes into all this throwaway clothing. And here I am doing it myself, you know, when I don't really need to. I'm doing it as an artist, not a paid person in a sweatshop. I'm doing it just to bring it to your attention.
Right, and kind of taking these sometimes throwaway or overlooked objects and bringing them to light. I also really see a lot of joy. When I look at these, I know that she wants to celebrate the like beautiful, tiny, like minuscule red and white buttons in that tiny loop, or the way that the font works on the cut up clothing tag, the tiny, tiny button. Like it is, she's almost using them and taking them in this abstract way where it, you know the form, but it goes in another direction. Mm-hmm. This one also, I feel like this one with the M and the cut up tag that I could take an educated guess that it at one time is said especially made for you by mom. This one feels like an homage to mother. I definitely feel that in this first one in the show.
Mm-hmm. I saw that as an upside down W.
Oh, I mean, she's not unintentional about the way that that form is.
As we move then to the right, there are three bigger pieces, but they use some of the similar elements. The yarn is the background, laid down in lines. And then on top of that, we have these bigger things that have been assembled. There's the first one on the left, there's a small white doll's dress with a sort of embroidered chest area. Piles of sparkling beads, other pieces of yarn, string of pearls, and then some small red beads that kind of look like berries sort of scattered around. And each small bead has its own concentric form of yarn, which is like ripples around something in a pond.
It's interesting. I read this not as doll's dress, but as baby dress, just based on scale. When I look at this one, you know, when you're up close, you can really name all the objects, but I really see this as, like, if you were to imagine these as strokes by a painter, there's such clear intentionality just simply from a formal perspective. Like, you're going from the left hand of the piece, and there's this line that comes to the lower half of the piece on the right, and then it brings your eye down to the very bottom where there's these red striating pieces of thread. So this one for me is just very formal. She's using the same techniques, and there's so much connection in the materials that she's using and the objects she's using, but I'm really struck formally by this one.
Mm-hmm. And the dress is cropped. It's pretty much cut in half at a diagonal.
But she uses such clean craftsmanship on that left-hand side of the dress. Like, it just makes such a clean, perfect line that you can kind of imagine the rest of it behind or what it once was.
Something else about these pieces, the edges are cropped so perfectly, almost like by a laser. There are no random threads they're very old, and they haven't really faded or gone crinkly or anything.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a testament to the way in which an artist can take such care of their work over time. This particular one, Booty, is one that we saw first in Bonnie's studio in New York, and she had such a close connection to this piece and really saw this as kind of an entrance point to the bigger works also from the 80s that are much more laborious and like a much grander scale. This piece is also where she's getting really playful, that there's this kind of man, or I guess I just assume it's a man. There's a figure created by a glove.
Oh, okay. So there's an upside down pink glove. It's one of those like you'd wear to tea, you know, and the fingers, I guess you see them as legs. Somebody's moving along. And then on one of the limbs, there are a series of little plastic rabbits on leashes, but they're kind of flying around through the air. The background is similar. It's yarn in striations, but this time a lot more pink and blue. At the top, a pink aluminum crochet hook leads to a white circle, and inside that is one of those little metal badges you used to get at the, Museum of Modern Art in New York, correct? Mm-hmm. So it just says MMA on a little shiny blue badge. At the bottom, there's a kind of mesh bag full of tiny buttons and beads.
Yes, and you'll see that mesh bag and her use of that as this transparent material. Actually, that comes in the most recent work in the show from 2023. She brings back some of that same technique kind of as a nod back to this early work. Talking to her, like, you know, 30 plus years later, 40 years later, when she talks about the way that once you put that first line of thread down, and when you put that second line down, it knows its path. And she has such a, I can see her, as she tells that story, she's literally like remembering the movement of what that feels like. And my guess is also the just like satisfaction of what that feels like, just as a maker.
Is she using glue?
Yes. So she's taking a toothpick and putting glue down and then following that line with the thread.
Wow, yeah. So it's super manual.
Yes.
There's no...
No, it's spray literally no, that. No, because she's practiced this so much, she really figured out like what is the best methodology. Because if she had, you know, put a spray down, or there's too much error that could happen. So it is really about the slowness of that and that repetition there.
Just along from that is another one. Now these are getting bigger, and the shapes are getting more defined. This feels like a girl. There are white glove hands, there's a sort of triangular dress, big pink head with plastic spoon eyes, hair done in that same kind of gold and white stripe, very fine lines. And the background again is more stripes, but straight with white on a gold background.
This piece also brings in the glove form from the piece prior, from Booty, which we were just speaking of. We also were just talking about this in the gallery with Bonnie, and I was mentioning that the form of this piece, the sort of long, thin, and also the color really reminds me of those, the fabric that goes in front of a pulpit in a church. There's something about this that really goes there for me. This one is a lot more playful, I think. This anthropomorphic, this like strain, is definitely going back to like a form of some kind, animal. But this one has a really defined palette too, really minimal. It's just pinks, whites, golds. So I'm just going to read a quote from Bonnie. When I got to Rutgers in 77, my friend Jeff Weschler, the curator at Rutgers University Art Gallery, now called the Zimmerli Museum, told me about the artist Lucas Samaras and the boxes he made. Some of the boxes were covered in a yarn technique, glued strands of yarn to form patterns. I was inspired by the fact that you could cover a surface with the kind of skin of yarn. I developed the technique of surrounding small objects glued to white felt, mostly with white yarn. I also remembered seeing folk art by an Indian tribe that glued brightly colored yarn into patterns. This technique is called Mexican yarn painting. It turned out that the yarn was not always glued in that case, but pressed into wax-covered boards, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's a Huichol Indian technique.
Oh, that's what it is, okay. Mm-hmm.
So as you move around, there are these much bigger pieces too. They're kind of like, they're a pair, I think. What are these two called?
This one, is the one on the left is called White Rock, and the one on the right is called Spoiled.
So White Rock is the name of the tag on the back of this garment, which is a dressing gown, maybe, or a dress?
Mm-hmm. It looks, yeah, it could be like almost like a nurse's outfit, or it's definitely a feminine form.
And it's upside down, and then in the middle there's an upside down doll. And the doll, either the doll's facing away from us too, and the back of the doll's head is that kind of rainbow candy stripe pattern you saw on sheets, right, in the 70s?
So 80s. Like, that feels like my bedroom sheets or something.
In the background, there's all sorts of things going on. There's beads, toys, there's knitting needles, all different kinds of kids' clothes, mostly pink. The little white gloves are here. And then there's a kind of Betty Boop knockoff in the background, winking. And then below that, in a very, very center, there's a half of a kind of papier-mâché egg with a duck family walking their ducklings. But it seems to be coming out of the doll's vagina and going upwards, like she's giving birth.
Yeah, 100%. This one has such a, like, a clear 80s palette in such a fun way. It's also created on a really familiar form, I think, that a timeless form on a baby blanket. So you can kind of imagine what that scale is. But the actual scale of the piece is 49 by 34. So that can just give the listener an idea. But there's a lot of, again, as you go around the show in person or look at the images, you're really coming back to those same techniques of kind of hiding certain objects, that allows this netting to hold some of these forms. But she works with it in such a precise way that over this period of time that those objects haven't moved. She's also, the embroidery floss technique comes in and kind of peeks in some of those moments throughout the work. And then there's other moments where, like, she allows that floss, it's like formally she allowed it to kind of do its thing. There's part of it within the bust of this dress form that just gets kind of abstract and fun and almost looks like what you imagine, like a pile of a bunch of embroidery floss looks like. And she, you know, I can see her looking down at a bag of thread and being like, oh, I like the way that looks formally. But she also has these, you know, there's shoelaces with the alphabet. I think the use of text in all of the work and where she's, it comes in here and there, but it's always so clearly intentional. And there's also this great line that's creating or mirroring part of the X in this piece that has ribbon, but that's in its reverse. You know how sometimes there's, you look at the back of crafted ribbon and it actually is just as beautiful in verso.
The companion piece is called Spoiled, and it's, I think, it's more chaotic. There's less things reining it in. The upside down doll, the head seems to be kind of disappearing into like a pillowcase, which is all twisted. There's a shoe, the pink shoe, bit of Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, blow up doll girl at the top. Lots of recognizable clothes. There's a hat, there's doll toys, you know, a bottle, a Tarzan dagger, random looking beads. These were made around the same time?
Yes, these were both, this and White Rock was made in 1986. There's actually a few others in this series. There's a particular work called Jane Bear that also exists that's about the same scale. I knew that I wanted to hang this show almost in and mirror these pieces, and that these were really central in the back of the gallery, how you walk in. But they're, this is really, to me, like Bonnie at the height of her career in her 30s, just making these mammoth, really physical works. You know, she's making them inside of a quite modest live work studio in New York. And so she's creating these at her kitchen table. So, And she's not a large person. So I just, there's a lot of physicality that comes across in this large scale work that you're just really aware of her manipulation and like just the physicality of her body in this work.
Is it, she using a sewing machine to hold everything together?
I actually have never asked her that particular question.
You know, you went to New York and looked around and asked her to show you some work.
Yes.
Where did these two come in?
These works were shown by JTT in a show in 2017. And when I was looking and researching Bonnie, there was this series of work from the 80s that I knew, no matter what direction I took the show curatorially, that these would be really central to the show. I had inquired about them, and I got some hesitation. And as a longtime person in the field, I wanted to be really mindful of kind of where that was coming from. So when Ali Ferlati and I flew out to New York this winter.
So who's Ali?
Ali Ferlati is the founder and creative director at I Love You Too. She's the owner here. She is the center, the North Star, if you will. So we went to New York and met Bonnie for the first time and really coalesced pretty quickly. We had a really incredible breakfast in which we all sort of just were able to get like really raw and open very early. And we kind of shared stories of childhood, because it's my job. I sat with her as we were looking through things and I said, you know, I really do want those works. And I saw them physically in the space. I knew their scale. And I saw them boxed up in her bedroom, which is a lofted space. So imagine 40 plus years in the same live workspace. And the care, again, that we were talking about with the work, that she is, it's all over, and that it was really kind of jenged in under her bed. And what I realized is that as a female in the art world who had been creating work and been really doing things on her own for that whole duration of time, when I asked the question of how can I have access to this work, can we get this work to Portland, her hesitation was just simply about the labor of what that would mean. Because in her long history, when someone asked her to do something, it meant that she herself physically had to figure out how to maneuver whatever it was to the gallery, to the institution, to the collector. And she didn't have just the physical support of what that meant. And part of our ethos and how we work with artists is that each individual artist has a really specific need, and us as a gallery want to be able to provide for that need based on what they need. And I really saw that she just needed that sort of support in her studio. So we connected her to an incredible prep who used to be at Pica, named Maggie Heath, shout out to you. They came in, really hit it off, and they were able, and Maggie was able to facilitate a shipping company coming into her live work space and make that feel comfortable to her. And that was such a pivotal moment for me. The inertia that she had as an artist to just be moving forth for all of that time, but also like how just incredibly hard that is on her body and just her personhood. Mm-hmm. So to be able to offer just that physical support, and we were happy to do that. And here they are.
Is the art world different now? Are you more likely to have a preparator or someone doing the heavy lifting, you know, when you're in your 30s?
I mean, it depends on what part of the art world you're talking about. You know, I think that there are, like, at a certain level, there's certain resources, and a lot of artists just don't have that same access. And there's a lot of expectation on artists historically to take care of it themselves. Like, oh, we give you this opportunity. Can you transport it? Can you pack it? Can you pay for that? There's a lot of pushback there now, which I agree with, that if we want to show, if we want to support, then we need to also provide that level of support for the artists and give them some ease on their end. Because they're doing the labor of the work, and if we can, we should be able to assist them in the other parts. That's not always possible. You don't often have the resources, but I think that you can get creative in how you're able to assist artists in mm-hmm. those ways.
Especially if the artist is now like in their 70s, right? Still lives in a fourth floor walker.
Yes, exactly. But I also think that artists should, that support should be given to a 20-year-old artist in Portland, Oregon, or Salt Lake City, Utah. That there's not an expectation that that labor is, it's not a given. We should be able to help them. But historically, that's not the case, especially for women.
You also have paintings here. They're in the window. They're kind of separate from the show. But then there are three framed pieces at the end, and these are almost contemporary, and they kind of hark back. You see themes in them from the 70s. What's this one called? It's got a...
The Pretty in Pink piece, I think there's a really big thread over to the work called White Rock. There's a lot formally that mirrors what's happening in that piece, about 30 years later,
mm-hmm.
I do the math correctly in my head. But this has such a familiar palette. It feels like you're walking down Canal Street. You really see there is this Asian dress form that she's taken apart. There's like a faux Disney baseball bat that's kind of serving as mm-hmm. a head.
With Disney princesses on.
I actually have some writing about this particular piece that I can read to you. On this work, Lucas writes, "This is one of the more recent pieces chosen for the show. The piece is about fertility and birth. The female character in the pink dress seems to be giving birth to the green stuffed animal and a ballerina doll. The main character has a Disney princess baseball bat for a head. Oh no! She's fine, though, because her arms are made of beautiful, magical things like necklaces and cell phone cover. And aside here, although many of the female characters are tied down, missing body parts, and part animal or flower, they're really fine. Why? Because they know life is hard and they survive in splendor, showing off their femininity and strength." This piece from 2018 brings back, again, with thicker yarn, pointing back to the work from the 70s, she's bringing back that yarn technique in the background of this piece.
New York City Princess is a small piece, has a key ring that says exactly that. There is a bra strap curled up in the middle, barrettes. Most of it is pink, but there's a blue opening made of sort of elasticated mesh fabric. What do you see in this that you've seen all along?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this was a really intentional placement for me in the show. It feels like almost the period at the end of the sentence, or the dot, 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 or the semicolon. As I was saying earlier, you see that the mesh where she's using it so skillfully to hold objects, that New York City princess keychain, she was able to hold that in the piece so skillfully through that same technique. This one has some of the same kind of underpants elastic as you see throughout the work. But again, like that first work we talked about with the zipper from the 70s, I see vaginal, I see orifice, I see birth canal really clearly in this one. I would encourage viewers to come by and see the show. The works really read well in images, and I encourage you to go to our website at iloveyoutooonline.com. But seeing the work and the labor in these and the craft in these, if you can see it locally, please come by. We're open Wednesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Janine Jablonski, the director of I Love You Too and curator of Bonnie Lucas 1978 to 2023, which is on now through May 29th. Thanks so much for doing Art Focus in person, Janine.
Yes, so it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my whoa. Andy Warhol, silver stream, can't tell them apart at all.
Sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en kboo.fm.
A la hora que me llamen por... Comienza ahora el programa.
Así que vamos a delirar. Deliremos por un ratito.